Gentlemen, Mr. Ambassador, it gives me very great pleasure to welcome you all to the Old Theatre for another in our series of lectures organised by the European Institute. It's a particular pleasure to welcome our speaker this morning because Mr. Amato is not only Prime Minister of Italy, and therefore, if I may say, Prime Minister, chooses a particularly appropriate day, the Ides of March, to be visiting us. But he is also, of course, a very distinguished academic in his own right, and indeed is a colleague. He graduated in law at the University of Pisa in 1960, did postgraduate work at the University of Columbia in America, and then became professor of Italian and comparative constitutional law at the University of Rome before becoming a full-time politician.
I'm not a full-time politician.
All professors, of course, are part-time politicians. Unfortunately, as I'm sure we all understand, the Prime Minister has had to curtail his visit to England a little. And so what we intend to do is to invite him to talk for about half an hour, and then there will follow 20 to 25 minutes of questions and answer. I know there are a lot of representatives of the press in the audience. I'm told they're at the back there. And what I'll try and do is to alternate questions from the media and from the students and staff of the LSE so that we get some kind of balanced question and answer session from 12 o'clock to about 20 past. Then, alas, the Prime Minister has to leave us to go back to Rome. So without more ado, Mr. Amato, I invite you to speak to us.
Well, dear director, dear friends, dear students, I don't have the time for an Italian lesson, which is 45 minutes, and so I lack some minutes in having 30 minutes only, but I want to give you at least the scheme of what I have in mind. What I have in mind by going after the title of this lesson, which is, as you know, Italy and Europe, the Rules of Chaos? Why this idea of the rules of chaos? Perhaps some of you, you might be familiar with the bibliography that arose in these years around chaos. Titles like non-periodic flow, chaotic dynamics, non-linear dynamics. Do they say anything to some of you? I hope so. No. And there is a wonderful... There is a wonderful title that is The Dripping Faucet as a Model Chaotic System, which gives you an idea of what. Well, there are many scientists in many fields, biology, atmosphere studies, physics, etc., studying what we consider chaos, which is disorder in our view. Disorder and chaos as the absence of rules, as something that happens because the initial route has been abandoned, there is no order at all, and chaos is the only thing we see. Now, many scientists think that this is not so, that chaos is simply the presence of rules and connections that we don't see or that we haven't foreseen and that produce the ordinary effect that there is between a cause and its effect. You have an initial route, you consider, you make your forecast considering the initial conditions that you had in mind at the beginning, But some new unforeseen factors enter into the scene. You are not aware of them, and your expected order changes. And if you don't see the factors, the supervening factors, you consider disorder what is simply the effect of something new. A second element to understand the rules of chaos, that if you don't understand what's going on, the divergence between the initial route and what happens increases and increases little by little, because new factors might step in one after the other, and the multiplied effect of these new factors entering could be an enormous distance between the initial expectations and the final outcome. The perfect example that is given usually to understand these two rules of chaos is the example of the butterfly flapping its wings in Tokyo, and after a while you have a storm in New York. This is quite well known in this area of studies, and this is typical of the atmosphere, that something happens in one side of the world and you expect good weather, but there is a new factor entering in that piece of the world, and then another, and then another, and then another, multiplying effects. And so this wings flapping in Tokyo after a while is what we saw a couple of days ago in New York. Probably a butterfly flapped its wings in Tokyo, and the Americans were not aware of it, which happens sometimes. Now, how these apply to our problems, to Europe, and in some way to Italy? I think that it does, and that's why I thought of chaos as a good scheme to understand what's going on in Europe and what's going on in Italy. We were going to Maastricht, and we are supposed to go to Maastricht in Europe. And going to Maastricht means mainly three basic things, and these were the things we expected and we still expect from us. First of all, it's of course a gradual process of unification, this is obvious, but when you have a gradual process, you are in the area where chaos might step in, because it's not an instant effect. Unique currency, this is the final expectation. Economic growth, political integration. Political integration is something that not all Europeans intend in the same way. If you ask in this country how they see the final stage of political integration, you will get probably a different answer than in France and in Italy. But in any event, political integration is one of the final goals of our common endeavor. And so we had an agreement in Nyborg some years ago, we had Maastricht a couple of years after, and the idea was to reach the point of a monetary unification. A monetary unification that should be reached by running a period of flexible exchange rates, defended against speculation, readjusted according to the variation of fundamentals in single countries, but step after step through economic and monetary coordination, the final stage would be a unique currency. Now, in the meantime, a couple of things happened. The new factors, the unforeseen new factors. First of all, the strength of the financial market was much higher than initially expected. The amount of money that the forces of the market were able to put into the channels were enormously higher than we thought at the beginning. I can tell you that when I was Minister for the Treasury of my country 5 years ago, in 87, I had some troubles with the lira. I remember it was September 87. And our central bank was spending a lot to defend our currency. And you know how much this a lot was? $1 billion per day. And I remember that spending $1 billion per day seemed to us something beyond any imagination, something that we couldn't stand, something that was outside the ordinary rule of any financial market. As you well know, in the last months, central banks in Europe considered it an ordinary day, the day when they spent only $1 billion. And to defend the pound, to defend the lira, to defend the franc, there were days in which much more than $1 billion was spent. I don't give you the figures because some of them are still secret, which means that it was really a lot. An enormous amount of money, because the market is always a surprise. And this is the first lesson. The market is always a surprise. And so the force of speculation in this period of our life was much more than the defenses that had been prepared in Nyborg could imagine. Second, the European countries did not do what they were supposed to do. They defended their currencies even when the fundamentals of single countries did not justify the defense of that parity. And this was the second factor, a political factor. I don't know what it was. But as a matter of fact, in these years, monetary stability became a goal in itself, independently on the real economic and financial conditions of single countries. Which of course helped speculation, because it is easier to defend a currency when it is clearly depending on the forces of the market that there is an attack. It is much more difficult when there are substantial reasons for which the defense is difficult and weak. And this happened. At the end of this part of our route, the EMS is not working anymore. It's something that we have to defend because it's part of our future, but probably something happened that implies corrections, that implies higher and different defenses. If we don't take into account the new factors that entered after our initial decisions, the divergences between the initial expectations and the final outcome will simply grow. I don't think that it would be sound to go on as we started at the beginning, because simply we would find ourselves in that position between the butterfly and the storm. Second, economic growth. You remember at the beginning, the only economic problem that Europeans seemed to have was the imbalance between rich and poor regions in their own continent. And growth was something that Europe had in itself. We were simply growing. We were at the head of the group of nations growing. Our only problem was to correct the imbalance between rich and poor regions in Europe. And this was the only obstacle to our growth. In the meantime, between that initial expectations and now, something happened, not in Europe, but outside Europe. New economies grew with lower costs than ours. Strong economies continued their growth through a process of innovation, higher and better than ours. At the moment, Europe seems squeezed between stronger economies like the Japanese one on the one side and lower cost economies like the Far East ones. And if the strength of this Europe is that this is one of the areas of the world where there is a common growth, this common growth might be imperiled unless we face the new competitors we have on our two sides. This is quite clear. I say this to the students in these days, you see, because you have a recession, and many people will tell you, well, a recession is a downtrend of the economic cycle. That's perfectly true. But perhaps in the present recession, there is something more that goes beyond and deeper the usual reasons of a usual downtrend. There is the we have the first consequences of the reduced competitiveness of European economies, and if we don't cure the roots of this reduced competitiveness of our economies, the main stake of our staying together, growth, might be imperiled. Political integration. We were moving toward a greater political integration. We found some obstacles in this island, but all of us were convinced that sooner or later all of us would stay together with flexibility, taking into account the reasons of each other, but we could succeed. What happened in the meantime? National feelings growing into single countries, regional movements growing in single countries, anti-government oppositions growing in single countries. A new phenomenon according to which what the majority is losing does not go to the traditional opposition ready as an alternative, but goes around to other forces who are simply representing a no, or a summing up of various no's, which means difficulty in the process of political integration. It is difficult to integrate Europeans. It is becoming difficult to integrate at the national level the citizens of one single country. What we are doing now in all this matter of subsidiarity, some of you students will find it strange. Why are all these European leaders caring about subsidiarity? What is this subsidiarity? What does it mean? Catholic students might remember that Maritain was one of the basic sources of the concept of subsidiarity for the sake of natural societies that cannot be substituted for by the state. The family, the church, the school, these are the natural societies, and the states can be a subsidiary of these natural societies. And all this peculiar culture is coming up again at the center of the European scene, picked up by prime ministers who applaud to subsidiarity. Why? Because they feel that there are difficulties in having the necessary consensus they need inside their own countries, and they must say, well, you in that region might remain with your culture and your identity. You in this nation might keep your rules, and Europe will not be a substitute for all of this. And this is again means something new. Now, this is all as a scheme, you see. So we had three main goals: a unique currency, economic growth, political integration. In a few years, new factors entered into our scene, in the monetary field, in the economic field, in the political field. If we don't take these factors into consideration, Europe will break up. And we will go to the disruption of it. There won't be any EMS anymore. There won't be any European growth anymore. There won't be any political integration anymore. But politicians are paid to foresee new factors. What is very strange in some way for scientists is the ordinary job of politicians. And I introduce here a new element with some pride, that scholars who study political arenas are much more aware of nonlinear dynamics, of the dynamic of chaos, than scholars of other fields. Because they perfectly know that the political arena of any political conflict might change all of a sudden, that new factors enter necessarily, because the reactions of people are something that is changing in itself. And that's the reason why it is our job as politicians to take these new factors in account, to be aware of them, and to prevent the storm. And this is what you have the right to expect from us. A few words upon Italy. The scheme applies to Italy as well, the scheme of the butterfly and of the storm. You know Italy perhaps more than I do, I suppose, most of you. And you perfectly know that Italy had two main negative features, a gigantic public deficit. It's still there, even though under some more control, but it's still there. But most of all, an excess of expenditures, an excess of public properties, an excess of political appointees in the economic area, in the social area. Our public health system was run by political appointees until a few months ago. With the taxpayer paying more for the benefits that the political system could draw out of all these things than for actual and efficient services that he could have the right to expect from the state. This is something that is well known. This is part of the old story. What has to be clear is that there is a connection between this economic and social system overburdened on the one side and the political system, the members of which could get votes and consensus mainly out of these overburdened economic and social system. These are not independent of each other. These are the two faces of the same coin. Now, to be short, I am perfectly aware that I broke the system with the action of my cabinet since I began my work a few months ago. And I was aware at the time that I was breaking the system. I found it very funny reading The Economist, who said that I was here to bury Caesar, not to praise him, that I made a good start with the economy in July, but a horrible start with politics last week. Now, leave last week where it is for the moment. But going back to July, I don't know who wrote that piece, but really he does not understand anything about Italy at all, because that start had to do with politics more than with the Italian economy. And if you don't understand that privatizing public corporations, that getting rid of political appointees in their running bodies has to do more with politics than with the economy, you haven't understood Italy and its real problems, and where the problem is, and where the connection between the economic and the political system is. And so I broke the system there. The process of privatization is part of it. And the obstacles that I have been meeting on the road were not economic, were political. Now there are some financial obstacles, but I was aware of it. It depends on the money on the international market, and the recession is not the right moment, the most proper moment to sell whatever on the market. But this is a difficulty that everybody meets, Italian or not Italian. But in any event, when I broke the system, I was perfectly aware that I was introducing factors of instability into the system. And my expectation was that after a while, a new electoral system would have given the country the stable majority needed to run this new economy and these new social services. I was perfectly aware of the fact that I myself was representing a sort of a transitional government with the job of breaking the old rules and preparing the country for a new stable period possible only with a new electoral system. This was my route, and this is why I flapped my wings in July and kept flapping my wings in the months after. What is new? What is new? Because a certain amount of instability was already my original route. And I couldn't change the rules without accepting some factors of instability. What is new is all this business of corruption coming up and the consequences that it throws onto political parties, political leaderships, political figures. This is really a profound change, more profound than expected, independently of the judicial destiny of these or that figure. This has created the expectation in Italy, and perhaps the need in Italy, of an almost totally new political class, political, I wouldn't say political system, political class intending new persons in politics. This is something that nobody could foresee, at least with this intensity, months ago. And here we have the difference. Until a few months ago, we expected a new electoral system to allow the old parties to reshape themselves into these new boxes of less proportional electoral system, and to be able, after this operation, to run the country on a more stable basis. And the new electoral system was thought of with this expectation. The Christian Democrats and their allies, one block, a progressive block on the left. So you see the same pieces, the same men that put themselves into the new boxes and prepare a more stable system with a stronger majority and with an opposition ready to overcome, as it is the case in the system of this country, Great Britain. What happened in the meantime changed totally these expectations. I don't expect these parties to be the players of the new game. I don't expect this man to be the leading figures of the new system. This wide thing of corruption, wider than perhaps most of Italians had in mind. you know, most Italians were aware of the fact that the parties were getting more money than provided for by the statutes. And not only, I mean, everybody, I was with some judges, friends of mine, for dinner some days ago. And I said to them, you remember, years ago, it was obvious that the administrative secretary of a party, administrative secretary, if the one in charge with financial resources in Italian, there is a political secretary and an administrative secretary. The administrative secretary is in charge of money. Now, it was obvious for everybody to say, well, the administrative secretary of a party must have the immunità parlamentare, must be a parliamentarian to avoid trials coming on his head without parliamentary authorization. Now, you too, I said to my friends, had this obvious idea in mind. Of course, they must have immunità parlamentare. Why should they have immunità parlamentare? Well, the only reason is that everybody expected that there was some more than allowed by the statutes in the finances of our parties. But what Italians are discovering is that there was too much more. Not only in terms of amount of money, but in terms of perfection of the devices that were set up in order to get resources out of an enormous amount of activities. And Italians who know how our Internal Revenue Service is full of holes and defects wonder how is it possible that this other Internal Revenue Service is so perfect. This is a horrible question in some way, but it has some reasons, and it has many reasons for a person like me who happens to be the Prime Minister of this country, with the responsibility of taking the country out of this mess. But the main point that I want to stress here is that with these things coming out, independently of the final destiny of the trials, which depend on many judicial technicalities, as you all know, Italians now want a different political class, as they say. And so many politicians probably are not affected by judicial action, are not in a position to run for re-election, because they are part of this old system. And this is the new factor I was talking about. The new electoral system that we were working for will not be the new atmosphere for the old parties and for the old men. It will be the new atmosphere for new parties and new men. What I expect from my country is that it will be able, in some months, in 1 year, to renew its ruling class, to get new people out of the professions, of ordinary jobs, etc., and to bring them into parliament, for the simple reason that old people will not be accepted anymore. That's the reason. It's not that somebody decided it by decree. It's something that is stemming out of the feelings of the country. And that's why it is necessary to reach the point of having this new electoral system. And this is the difference between chaos and a positive solution. Because with this need of the country, of something new, if we don't give the country a new electoral system, If we dissolve this parliament and we go to election with the proportional system we have now, chaos will have generated chaos. If we succeed in keeping this parliament where it is, working for a new electoral system, at that point, this peaceful revolution might occur. And you will have something that later on historians will explain. Italy has been defined as a blocked democracy by most scholars of different countries. A democracy which, for many reasons, and depending on many factors, was without change for 50 years. And so there was a need of change, so profound and in some way so pressed in, that after the end of communism, something happened that this need of change was satisfied all of a sudden. When you try to satisfy the need of change all of a sudden, you have to be very careful. Because if it is peaceful and with a new system, then it works. And this is something that I hope, I rely upon the possibility that will happen. Otherwise, it is chaos. And that's all. You see, in Europe as well as in Italy, the butterfly is flapping its wings. And it is a huge butterfly. And it's not in Tokyo. It is much closer. It's up to us to understand the message and to work upon it. I thank you.
Prime Minister, this lecture hall has heard many moving and powerful speeches, but rarely, I think, has an audience here been privileged to share the thoughts of a Prime Minister in the way in which you have shared yours with us. But now, time for questions. Can I? Yes. Could you say who you are? It might help.
Can you speak a little louder?
Financial Times.
Yeah. Come closer. Come closer.
Prime Minister, I understand that you are a great fan of Gustav Mahler. My question is...
No. No. No, I heard about him and I like his music, but not in the sense you are saying now. Well, you know, this is something that it's difficult. It's obviously difficult, but politics is the art of making these sort of things that seem impossible. That's the difference between politics and physics, for instance. In physics, what is impossible is simply impossible. In politics, this sometimes is not. It's not true. Now, I have a parliament. There are a lot of people understanding what's going on, and there are a lot of people who share my feeling that either we change the electoral system or the country will finish into the hands of the extreme parties. Now, this helps in politics, you see, because there is an increasing conflict between the extremist parties, the so-called Rifondazione Comunista on the one side, the Italian Socialist Movement on the other side, the NET, La Rete, etc. A struggle between these parties on the one side and in some way the other ones on the other. It is possible for the other ones just to prepare a future for the country. And of course, most of them will hope that this will be a future also for themselves. Probably they are not completely aware of the possibility of the individual futures, but this is another strength that might be used. That's all. And leave Mahler where he is.
In his grave, yes.
Well, this is something that this is a good question. This is something that could occur with Italy going to election with the present electoral system, because with the present electoral system and with the fragmentation of our parliament, it could be quite possible that the Lombard League would be the first party in parliament, and so with much more influence and power in parliament than it could have with a different electoral system that forcing others to join with each other. Right, so I would say that if we change the system, and it is with the smallest amount of proportionality that Italians are capable to introduce, then the danger you see might be minor.
Under a new system, you think the danger would be small?
Yeah, this is definitely my answer.
Madam, at the back.
Well, you know, your Prime Minister has 20 votes of majority. I myself have 20 votes of majority. There was a great understanding between us. And I definitely think that at the end of the story, we'll succeed in bringing Parliament to the ratification of this treaty. This is what I think. I mean, and this was, of course, one of the main points we could discuss about your domestic problems. Then we discussed also recession and economy, and there are many similarities between our two countries that are doing better, perhaps, than expected a few weeks ago, with the first signs of spring, which are physical today in this city.
The Borussia.
You're talking about Europe or Italy? Right. Exactly.
At the same time dealing with the current bribery scandal. And we may not have the 1 year time horizon where scandal leaving your effect.
Yeah, we might have it. We might have it or not, it depends. I can tell you that if the cabinet, whatever cabinet, remains with the slim majority that I have now, it is more and more difficult, but not impossible. But not impossible. If there a stronger majority can be formed around the cabinet, this would make it easier. That's all. I don't see. Consider that Kickback City, as we called it a few minutes ago, Tangentopoli can be translated only, I suppose, with Kickback City. Is more a business of judges and tribunals than of parliament. So parliament has to concentrate on the electoral law. Okay.
We're taking this type of situation,
I see. Now I see your point. Well, this is a good point, but it depends on the deterioration in some way. My personal impression, you know, is that a deterioration could be the effect of political instability more than of the economy as such. I have the expectation that we can get out of this recession sooner or later and in due time to avoid the consequences that you were foreseeing. While I might see these consequences coming out of political instability, cabinet continuously under attack, difficulties in strengthening the majority, etc. So I said this a few weeks ago, and this remains my judgment about Italy. After all, its real weakness is politics more than the economy or the financial problems.
Gentleman with glasses.
You wrote that piece. You are my man. You are my man. You are not guilty.
I am a mole anyway.
That's a nasty question, but a good one. I can tell you, it was, first of all, not really, because this is part, in some way, of the dignity of many people in Italy. I think that very few people were aware of the kind of devices that we are discovering now. And as I said before, most of us were aware of the fact that the parties had more money, as I said, than the law provided for. And I must say that many, many people, but not only politicians, also others, accepted this as a system. And this was accepted by everybody, by politicians, by tribunals. My dear friend and colleague Marco Pannella has in mind that many judges should put the question you were putting to me to themselves. Why are you acting now and you didn't do it before? I asked this to some judges, friends of mine, and they said to me, when I tried to do it, I found sudden obstacles. Difficult to explain, but my inquiry had obstacles and I had to give it up after a while. And this might be the answer. But this has to be still to be explained. But this is the reason for which I think that if Italians who accepted these as a system, don't accept it anymore, this is good for the country. And this implies that politicians have to change. That we have to find new politicians. And this is one of the reasons why I myself confirmed the decision that I had taken months ago to leave after this experience of Prime Minister. That's all.
I think, yes, question, but the, yes, sir.
Away in
time you're talking about the same block of parties that have been held in power, that have held power for the last 50 years, engineering the transition and the new system. And I wonder whether the Christian Democrats, the Socialists, even the present PDS, the main party on the left, have any interest in engineering something that will wash them away as well as the previous system.
I wonder myself, but... But this is the only thing that might do, you see, because they have two alternatives, to leave things as they are, and so to go again to the electorate with the present proportional system. This would be the inevitable success of the extreme parties, to change the system for a sense of national responsibility and with the hope of partial survival. I would say that even Bentham would conclude that it is convenient to them to go to the second choice.
Yeah. Yes, behind the photographer. Yes.
Well, I don't know enough about the coming months to give you a precise answer, I must say. I think that a cabinet is needed as long as the legislature, then as long as this parliament will remain. The time to have the new electoral system. I said yesterday to a friend of mine that I would be satisfied if Italy could reach next spring, at least, with a new electoral system and vote for political elections at the same time with the European elections. But if it goes further, it is even better. Because when somebody says, well, let's have a new electoral law and then let's go and vote, they still think of Italy as it was with the previous parties, that simply changing their law are ready to go and vote. But if the change is profound, as I think, the citizens will need some time to organize themselves within the frame of the new electoral law. And so it is in the interest of the new system and of the citizens, of the new politicians, to have the necessary time to organize what they have to organize to go to the elections. So in this period of time, a stronger majority would be helpful. When I think of a stronger majority, I think first of all of the Republican Party, and second, I think of the PDS, even though I understand that the PDS has an enormous difficulty. They are competitors of Rifondazione Comunista, and they are attracted by the government, but they still want to be competitors of Rifondazione Comunista, not to lose votes at the next elections. Now, this makes their position very uncertain as to the substantiality of sharing responsibilities of government. Now, I wonder whether one of those two ones, both of them, could understand that to pass over this period of time to share responsibilities of government could be helpful, not for them, but for Italy on the whole.
Dr. Armato, I'd like to ask you about a big European butterfly. Namely, I think there are a lot of industries in Europe that have traditionally absorbed a lot of labor, namely in steel industry, namely a lot of the low value-added industries.
You see, this is exactly what we should do, and we should do it more than we are doing now. Because obviously in this kind of problems you have two areas to focus upon, the short-term problems and the medium-term problems. I would say that on the short-term problems there is an ensemble of tools that any European country has to reduce social consequences of unemployment, and we are using them, other countries are using them. But I can tell you the main area is the other one. Because if we don't strengthen our industrial system in Europe, if we don't spend more and better in research and development, if we don't train European youngsters like you and others, to fit to new jobs and new qualifications that are needed at higher technologies levels, there won't be jobs for a long time. And this peculiarity of the European economies, that they say that they are in good shape when they have a rate of growth of 2 or 3%. You know, I saw the Prime Minister of Japan and he said to me, we are in a recession this year. God. And I said to him, what's your rate of growth? 3%. He said, my God. They call it recession, you see. Now, this is going to be the problem, that any downtrend could cost us in the future years jobs and jobs and jobs and pieces of our industry. That's the area where we have to do more than we are doing now.
Madam.
I think what I think, and I don't know whether I say what I think, but
of course my personal opinion is that obviously corruption is higher where it is discovered. This is a general rule of any century, and but it's, as all of us know, it's in some way part of economic life and part of political life in most centuries and in most countries. If you want my personal opinion, I think that at the moment, I think that in Italy it went beyond the usual level of corruption. And that's why it was discovered.
In the middle.
Since your exit from the ERM, you've committed to a very early re-entry. This has been postponed and postponed, very much like what's happening in this country with the ratification of Maastricht.
No, nothing to do with our corruption. It has to do with other events in Europe, I would say. Well, I can tell you, when we went out in September, we said to our partners, to our European partners, we will enter back into the system when our financial maneuver will be completed by through the approval of Parliament. Of course, being external conditions such as to give us guarantees of stability inside the EMS. our, let's say, domestic conditions were implemented because we finished our financial maneuver and Parliament approved it. But in the meantime, the new factor entering into the scene, you see, we have another example of the butterfly here. The condition inside the EMS were more and more unstable because of the attack mainly to the franc. And so at the moment, I don't see it fruitful for my lira to enter the system unless these attacks reach their ends. I think that the election would be, the French election, would be a significant turning point. Yeah, this is a good question. You see, I had to read on the Herald Tribune, and perhaps it was the New York Times originally, a good article 3 days ago saying exactly what I personally think, that Italians have to strike a balance between their need of absolute justice and the need to have their economy working, which is very difficult to accept, and it's very difficult to be said by a politician, because when a politician says so, he's immediately a friend of the thieves. But this is the problem. This is the problem for any country. Can a country survive with a 5 years period of time devoted to public trials and to all the hostile feelings that are moved by this kind of public show? That's why I tried a few days ago to find a political solution that could give to the Italians what they probably wanted more, to have these people out of politics, to have as much as restitution as possible, not necessarily with long trials. As far as I understand, this solution is not mature at the moment in my country. It will take time, but it will be considered necessary sooner or later. Well, the Lombard League is something difficult to define at the moment, I would say. When I was saying before that, I suppose this is the final question because I have to leave.
For the LSE.
Yeah. Sorry. When I said before that Rifondazione and MSI are two extremist parties, and I said them only with La Rete, I had in mind the fact that in the last weeks, after all, the Lombard League had a different parliamentary conduct, not supporting the position of these parties on behalf of immediate dissolution and against the approval of a new electoral system. They are probably on the other side, they are in favor of a new electoral system, and this is an important division at the moment. If you consider, besides this, the Lombard League, it's quite difficult to give a final judgment upon them, because there are many, many things in it. It could be, I said many, many times that it could be integrated into a democratic system. It could be the source of a subversive trend in Italy. They have both souls in their movement, and I don't know how it might work. It also depends on the others. It also depends on the others. I don't think that Craxi still has a political future, And I hope that many socialists might still have a political future in a different Italian political system, because I'm personally convinced that there are many, many things that Italy still needs in the cultural baggage of my party.
Prime Minister, we must let you go. But before we do, can I say that, or share with the audience, the fact that the Prime Minister's association with the LSE dates well before today. In 1976, in fact, he was interviewed by one of our colleagues, Robert Leonardi, in the course of research, which has finally been published in a book entitled Making Democracy Work, Civic Traditions in Modern Italy. And I would like, Prime Minister, to give you this as a memento of your visit here to us today, in the hope that you will indeed make democracy work.
Okay, thank you.